Okay, so we saw yesterday that the Gemara paskened absolutely clearly, like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel in the first halacha, like the Rabbonon in the second halacha. So let's just remind ourselves of what exactly that means. There were two halachas mentioned in the Mishnah. There were actually more than two, but we're focusing on two. Number one and number two. The first one was, what happens when the Beis Din say you have 30 days to bring a proof? And he only did so after 30 days, so he missed the deadline. So the shita of the Tanna Kamma was, okay, you missed the deadline, so you missed the deadline. And we cannot relate, we cannot accept your proof. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel disagreed, and he said, why is it his fault? He was unable to discover anything until 30 days were up. Now he found it, so we do accept it. And yes, that's the way we paskin. So we paskin like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. The second halacha was a completely different halacha, where the Beis Din did not give a timeline, but rather they asked him specifically, do you have a proof? Do you have a shtar? And he said, absolutely not. And then at some time afterwards, whatever it may be, a week later, 2 weeks later, 10 years later, he suddenly shows up and says, actually, I do have a proof after all. So that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, one second, the Rabbanon say we don't believe him, because it's very, very suspicious. If he emphatically said that he doesn't have a proof, how come all of a sudden he does? Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, once again, I would disagree, because what's so suspicious about it? Maybe he really thought that he didn't have a proof, and all of a sudden he discovered Edom. In that case, we do not paskin like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. So again, in the first case, in the 30-day timeline, we do paskin like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, the leniency of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. In the second case, when he says clearly that I do not have a proof, then we paskin like the Rabbonon and we say, I'm very sorry, it looks suspicious. We cannot say it's vadai a lie, but it definitely arouses suspicion. If you said emphatically that you do not have a proof and all of a sudden you decide that you do, something has to now ring an alarm bell and we do not accept that. That's what we saw yesterday in the Gemara. So have a look at the Gemara. We are on the seventh last line of the Gemara, the very first word on the line, Hahu Yenuka. Yes, you have the Gemara, Hahu Yenuka. Says the Gemara, Hahu Yenuka. Now, Yenuka, literally translated as a child. Hahu Yenuka, de Tavuhu Ledina. They were teveya, they claimed to din the child. Now, essentially, a child obviously cannot be ever summoned to din, but the one case that he can be is when I haven't got a claim against him per se, but rather I claim that his deceased father owes me money. So therefore, even though I can never have a din of dvarim, as it were, with a cotton, cotton's not chayev anything, but the only thing that a cotton is chayev is if his father passed away and he owed me money, well, then I have a right to take it from the estate. So under those circumstances, I would allow to be summoned, I would allow to summons the child to Beis Din. And that's what's going on over here. Hahu Yenuka, there was this child, Tavu Ladino, who was summoned to a din. Kameid Rav Nachman, in front of Rav Nachman. Omale. So Rav Nachman, who is the presiding judge, says to this Yenuka, tell me, is Loch Sadi, do you have any witnesses to prove you're innocent? Omale, loy, no, I don't. Isloch raya, if you don't have witnesses, perhaps you have a shtar. Once again, omale, loy, no, I do not. Now, isn't that the exact case of the Mishnah? This was the second case, the case that we called the Raya Achroina. This is the case of the Mishnah, where if you say that you don't have a proof, then that's it. There's no going back from that. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, there is going back, but we said we paskin like the Rabbonon. So on that basis, says the Gemara, Chayvei Reb Nachman. So Rav Nachman, who has stated was the presiding judge, was mechayev, fine, you're considered guilty then. We think that yes, your father did owe this particular person the money. We asked you absolutely clearly, do you have any proof or do you have any witnesses to back up your claim that you are innocent? And you said, no, well, that's it then. The case is finished. Then you're absolutely chayav to pay. And there's no recourse. You can't backtrack. So he was mechayav him. What happened? Hava kabochi v'ozil. So this child was very, very upset. And he continuously cried. Shamu hamech inshi. So there were these people who heard him. They heard the child crying. What happened? Well, the child says, I was summoned to Beis Din and I've been made to pay. Apparently I'm guilty, or at least my father was considered guilty of owing somebody money, and I'm going to have to now pay up from the estate. They asked me if I have any proof to back up my claim that he was innocent, and I said, no, I don't. Omrulei, so they said to him, you know something? We've got good news for you. Anon yadinon, we happen to know b'mili da'avucha. We happen to know about your father's affairs. And therefore, even though you said that you do not have any proof, but we do have. You're a child, so you don't know exactly what's going on. But we happen to know that we do have proof, whether it's a shtar or witnesses, to actually prove that your father was indeed innocent. Says the Gemara, Omer of Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, now, if we would stop over here, what would we think? What would we think? We would think that Lechaira, we are back to the case of the Mishnah, in which we paskin like the Rabbanon, that once you say you've got no proof, that's it, you cannot have recourse. So we would think, Lechaira, that we have arrived once again at the machloikas between the Rabbanon and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, in which the Rabbanon said that, sorry, that's it, you're finished. Once you said those magic words that I do not have a proof, I do not have witnesses, then it doesn't help now for people to come along and say, yes, well, we know your father's affairs. Sorry, too late, game over. However, says the Gemara, that's not the case. Look at the Gemara. Omer Rav Nachman, says Rav Nachman, Baha? In a case like this, afilu Rabbonon moidi. The Rabbonon, who are normally Machmir, over here they would agree to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel that what? That there is a recourse. And that even though you declared emphatically that you do not have proof, you do not have witnesses, you do not have a shtar, but now that you've discovered a shtar or a witness, because these people said that we are aware of your father's affairs, even the Rabbanon would admit that Beis Din would have to accept that. Why? Diyanuka. Because a child, b'mili da'avuho, in the matters of his father, lo yoda, does not know. So if we're talking about a claim that was made against him personally, that's when the Rabbanon say that, listen, if you declared clearly, emphatically, that I do not have a proof, there's no recourse. You can't now come back. It looks very suspicious. It's true. Rav Shimon Gamliel disagreed, but we pass tonight the Chachamim. But over here, the Chachamim would admit. Why would the Chachamim admit? Because a child is not expected to know in detail the affairs of his father. So when the child says, they asked him, do you have proof? No. Do you have a shtar? Do you have edim? No. That's not the end of the story. When people now come along and they say, we actually are aware of your father's affairs, so the Rabbanon would also agree we would have to accept that because there's nothing suspicious. Normally, if you say you don't have a proof and then all of a sudden you show up with a proof, that's suspicious. We cannot say you're a vadai liar, but it definitely is suspicious because after all, a person is aware of his own affairs. So why did you say so clearly you don't have a proof, and then all of a sudden you show up with a proof? Something looks a bit alarming. But in the case of the child, there's nothing alarming. He genuinely thought there's no proof. He cannot be expected to know about the matters of his father. So when these people show up and they say, ah, you didn't know, but we do, and we happen to know that your father was innocent, even the Rabbanon would accept that. And that's why Rav Nachman said that although initially I was mechayev this tinoik to pay, but I must now reconsider the case based on the new evidence. How can you bring in new evidence after you initially declare that you don't have any? It's only in a normal case that you cannot now bring new evidence because it arouses suspicions. But in the case of a Yosim, it does not arouse any suspicion. He's not expected to know in detail the matters of his father. Yes.
Why would this be only a yukna? If I'm a 50-year-old man and my father died with a problem, I don't know his ins and outs of my father's business. So it should hold the same for me whether I'm a yukna or whether I'm 50.
Apparently not. Gemara is meduik, it's a good point. Only in a yanuka. An adult is expected to know it as inheritor of the assets, and you've got to be aware of all the ins and outs. Yeah, chiddush, maskul. Says the Gemara on the fourth last line. Hahi itza. There was this woman. Denofak shtara. Mituse Yoda. A star emerged from her hands. What star? Which star? Let's have a look at Rashi. The Nofak Shtora Mituse Yoda. Which star did she suddenly appear with? Sheheminuha Haloiva Vahamalva. The loiva and the malva, the borrower and the lender had believed her. To look after it. In other words, she was a third party over here, and she had been entrusted to look after a shtar. So we have a borrower, we have a lender. For whatever reason, we want the shtar, like I think the word in English is to be held in escrow, which normally refers to money. Here it's the shtar. So there is a shtar that testifies about a loan that was conducted between Reuven and Shimon. And for whatever reason, neither of them are holding onto the shtar. Who's holding onto the shtar? This particular woman. That's what it means. He'eminuha. They had entrusted her. You are the one who now has to look after the shtar. Fine. Amrolei. So the woman says, Yodana Bahai Shtara. I happen to know that this shtar de Poria Hava, it's been paid up. It's been paid up. Meaning, what's normally the halacha? What normally happens when a shtar is paid up? Well, then the lender has to give the shtar back to the loiva. And the loiva will invariably throw it out, rip it up. Shouldn't be in existence at all. The fact that a shtar is in existence under ordinary circumstances is itself the greatest proof that it has not been paid. Were it to be paid, the assumption is the loiva would jolly well make it his business to destroy the shtar. The very fact the shtar is not destroyed and exists is under ordinary circumstances a proof that apparently the shtar has not yet been paid up. So here we have a strange case where this woman who had been entrusted with the shtar, and the shtar very much does still exist, and yet she claims that it's been paid. So do we believe her or we do not believe her? Says the Gemara, third wide line. Hemna Rav Nachman. That's why we're bringing in this story, because once again, it's Rav Nachman acting as a dayan, similar to the last story. So Rav Nachman believed her. Now this is a chiddush. Why is this a chiddush? Not only, as mentioned is the shtar in existence, which itself might be a big question mark. But moreover, who said that she has the right to express her opinion about whether the shtar is or isn't paid? Imagine I would see somebody holding the shtar in which it says, my friend Ploini owes me $1,000. I would come to Bezdin and say, I happen to know the shtar is paid. Well, that's irrelevant. That doesn't help at all. I need two edim. So over here, what right does this woman have to claim that I happen to know that the shtar is actually paid up? And yet Rav Nachman believed her. Rav Nachman believed her. Big chiddush. So the Gemara is now trying to investigate this. Why did Rav Nachman give her ne'emonos? Why she believed? Oh, Malay Rav Rav Nachman. So Rav says, Rav Nachman, come on. Like, whose opinion is this? Whose opinion are you following? Karebi? Are you following Rebbe's opinion, the Omar Oisiois Niknis B'Mesira? Literally translated that letters are acquired by handing over. Look at Rashi, the last Rashi on the Omar. Ra'u Oisiois Niknis B'Mesira. Says Rashi, what does that mean? Oisio is nicknes the Mesira. Ha moicher shtar choiv lechaveiro. What's the halacha? Very, very important. Shaila Rabbi say. I lend money to Ploini. Ruvain lends money to Shimon. Okay, Shimon writes a shtar. I hereby declare that I borrowed money from Ruvain. I owe him $1,000. Ruvain is now holding the shtar. There exists the concept of mechiras shtoris. I can sell the shtar to somebody else. So now Levi is holding the shtar. And Levi has every right now to go to Shimon, you owe me $1,000. Why do I owe you $1,000? I didn't borrow from you, I borrowed from Reuven. True, but Reuven sold me the shtar. By the way, what is the big temptation to sell a shtar? Why would anybody want to borrow a shtar? What do you gain by borrowing a shtar? You're now owning a shtar that says you owed $1,000. No, and how much did you pay for it? $1,000. So not exactly a very profitable venture. The answer is that it's not true. A shtar will invariably be sold for less than the value stated in it. So why is it being sold? Because Reuven says, you know, to be perfectly honest, I cannot be bothered. I have no koyach now to go through Bezdin and start claiming for Shimon. I lent him the $1,000. I've got no koyach. You know what? I'll sell you the shtar for 800. And you take a gamble. You might make a profit of $200. If you're willing to put in all the work and take him to Bezdin and bring Eders and da-da-da-da-da, you stand to get $1,000, even though you only bought this for $800. For me personally, says Reuven, I'm prepared to do this. I'm prepared to lose $200 because at least I'm guaranteed the $800. So for that's the concept of mechiras shtoris. So now, Levi is holding a shtar, which says that Reuven borrowed money, sorry, Shimon borrowed money from Reuven and owes him $1,000. Levi is now the one holding the shtar. So does this now mean that now Levi can go to Shimon and say, excuse me, you owe me the $1,000. So look at Rashi again. If somebody sells a shtar choiv to his friend, kono hachoiv b'mesiras oisiois. At what point does Levi become, as it were, the owner of this choiv? What do you have to do? The answer is mesiras ha'oisius, handing over the letters, in other words, the transfer of the shtar. That is the kinyan. So just like if I buy a table from you, at what point do you become the owner? When I hand the table to you. So to over here, when I hand over the shtar. Now, even though this might sound simple, but it's not so simple. When I hand over the table to you, so what are you doing? You're doing a kinyan on the actual item that we are selling and buying. The chayv, the shtar, at the end of the day, remember, is what? It's just a piece of paper. How much is that piece of paper worth? 1 shekel. It's worth nothing. It's a piece of paper. It's my ticket, however, to maybe claim $1,000. That's true. So it's not clear cut. There is an opinion, and it's called Rebbe, that says that once you hand over the shtar, you are now the owner of that chayv, even though it wasn't you who originally lent the money, but now you are the owner of that chayv. That is the opinion of Rebbe. Back to our subject now. Why was this particular woman believed to say the shtar had been paid? Remember, she was neither the lender nor the borrower, but she had been entrusted to look after the shtar. So they had handed over the shtar to her. Says Rashi. The hochanami, says Rashi. Says Rashi, the hochanami konatus. So too over here, she has been koina the shtar. The hava kedido. It is as if it is hers, the ne'emenes, and that's why she's believed loimar porua, to say that it's been paid. In other words, we are trying to scratch our heads to work out why on earth is she believed to say that the shtar has been paid. She is neither the lender nor the borrower. She's just the holder of the shtar. So it would sound like, and this is what the Gemara is suggesting, and this is really the Gemara's question, are you trying to tell me that we're going with a psak of Rebbe? Rebbe says that when you hand over a shtar to somebody, they become the owner. So too, she has become, as it were, the owner of this shtar. And if she's the owner of the shtar, then she's perfectly believed to say that actually the shtar has been paid. Is that what we're trying to say? Because, by the way, we do not paskenite Rebbe. That's really the Gemara's question. We do not paskenite Rebbe. If we don't paskenite Rebbe, why is the Gemara saying that as soon as you hand it over the shtar in our particular case, she's believed to say the chayv is porua? Why? Why should that be?
Because she's the one that's owed the money.
She's not. She's just holding the shtar on behalf of the person who's owed the money. But we're assuming, if you follow Rebbe's opinion, that once you hand over the shtar, now she, as it were, becomes the owner. That's the Gemara's question. Are you trying to tell me that we are going with a psak of Rebbe? If we're going with a psak of Rebbe, then this story makes sense. Now that they've handed the shtar over to her, she's the boss. But the Gemara's question is that we don't paskin like Rebbe. And if we don't paskenite Rebbe, we maintain that the mere handing over of a shtar does not make you the owner of it. So if that's the case, even though they handed over the shtar to this woman, but surely she's not in charge. She's not a man de omer. How can it be that she's believed all of a sudden to say that the shtar has been paid?
Why would they hand her over the shtar? What was the reason? What, just like this?
Yeah, hold an escrow. We don't trust each other, whatever it may be. Says the Gemara, no, Omar Lei. He said, over here is different. Shani Hocha, over here is different. It's nothing to do with Rebbe. The reason why she's believed to say that the shtar has been paid is not because she's the owner of the shtar. So why so? De'i boye kol say. Literally translated, had she wanted, she could have ruined the shtar. Here we arrive at the world famous principle, the one word principle. What is that? Migu. What does migu mean? Migu, we have in countless places. We have undoubtedly encountered it ourselves. Migu means that if ever you make a claim in Bezdin, even if we are not sure whether you're telling the truth or not, whether to believe you or not, but if you could have claimed something else, and that would have won you the case, so then you're believed with whatever you did claim. Don't tell me I'm a liar. Had I been a liar, I could have claimed something else, which would have definitely got me off the hook. This is called migu, translated since. Since I could have done or said something else, and had I only done that, then you would have had to have believed me for whatever reason. So therefore, don't accuse me of lying when I say A, because I could have in fact said B. Had I said B, then I would have been believed. If that's the case, you've got to believe me also when I say I. Don't accuse me of being a liar, because had I looked for a lie, I've got better lies up my sleeve. This particular woman, what did she say? She said the shtar very much exists, but it's been paid. But imagine had she said, sorry, the shtar's gone. She could have gone to her back garden and burned the shtar. Had she burned the shtar, what would have happened? The shtar is no longer in existence, and the malva now has no claim against the lover, because his only claim in the first place was on the fact that there's a shtar. If the shtar's gone, then his claim is gone as well. So says the Gemara, that's why we believe the woman to say the shtar's been paid. Why? Because what are you worried about, that she's a liar and the shtar's not being paid? Well, if she really wanted to lie, she could have lied in a much better way. She could have just ruined the shtar. She could have ruined the shtar. And had she ruined the shtar, what would have been the case? Then she definitely would have been believed. Finished. There's no shtar. It's gone. Finished. Gone. So therefore, we need to believe her also when she says the shtar is not being ruined. It is in existence, but it's been paid. That's what the Gemara says. Iboye kolse. Had she won, she could have just ruined the shtar. Now, some have the same story. There's an alternative version of events, though, but on the opposite direction. Look at the bottom of the line of the Gemara. Ikka da Omri. Some say that the story, in fact, was the opposite. Loi hemne Rav Nachman. Some say the story actually was that Rav Nachman did not believe this woman to say that the shtar has been paid. Omale Rav Rav Nachman v'hoi boye kolsi. Why indeed did you not believe her? Surely she could have ruined the shtar. Says the Gemara, kiven de ischazik bebeidina. Once the shtar has been established in Bezdin as a valid shtar, iboya kolse lo yomrinon. Now that claim does not anymore exist. Now, what does that mean? Why does she not have that theoretical backup claim that I could have ruined the shtar? So there's a machlokas Rashi and Tosas, a very difficult Rashi. But the way Tosas and other Rishonim learn is that we're talking that the Bezdin actually saw the shtar with their own eyes. So therefore, your whole theoretical backup claim has just gone up in smoke. Don't tell me that I could have claimed, but the shtar's gone. No, you couldn't. We just saw it 5 seconds ago. Ah, so you don't have a migu. If you don't have a migu, then in a chanami. So we don't believe her. She's not the bailim of the shtar. Because even though Rebbe says that Oisius and Niknes the Masira, we do not paskin like that. And that's why, according to the second version of events, Rav Nachman actually did not believe this woman. Ah, she's got a migu. No, she does not have a migu. Why she's not of a migu? Because we're talking about, this is the way that Tosafot says it, we're talking about the Bezdin actually saw with their own eyes, they saw that the shtar exists. Well, once they see that the shtar exists, you can hardly say that the shtar is not here. We just saw that it is here. So there's no migu, therefore she has no nemonos. Yeah.
So in this case, she says the shtar was paid, but she didn't give it to the guy that paid her. Because he could, so she held the shtar even though he paid.
whatever reason, yeah.
Okay, now, but she could have come back and said the shtar was not paid, and he could say, "What are you talking about? I paid you." And they could say, "Well, then why don't you have the shtar?" So she didn't give me the shtar. So
No
she
such
can.
thing. No such
Why?
thing.
Why?
Because if the loiver really paid up the malva, then
Yeah.
it's his responsibility to make sure that the shtar is now destroyed. And if he didn't, then it's his own fault, and it's his biggest proof that he hasn't really paid.
So when she comes back and says the shtar is paid, she should say, "I don't have the shtar. I gave it to the guy. The shtar is paid. It's his. He took the shtar."
She didn't say that. You're right, but she didn't say that. She showed us the shtar. She waves, dangles the shtar in front of our eyes and says, this shtar, which looks to you like it's still outstanding, has actually been paid.
So where was the mistake? The guy that paid it never took the shtar?
Again, according to the second version of events, when she makes this claim, she is not believed. She is not believed. If I see the shtar in existence, that is proof to me that the chayv, the debt, is still outstanding. The first version of events says that she is believed because she could have actually just ruined the shtar anyway. She could have just thrown it in the garbage. Once it would have been thrown in the garbage, well, then the malva couldn't have claimed anyway from the loiver. The second version of events says, no, that migu does not exist. Why not? Because we're talking about that the Bezdin actually detected the shtar with their own eyes. So you can hardly tell me that the shtar is gone when we saw it. So if we see the shtar with our own eyes, as far as we're concerned, the very existence of the shtar tells me that the chayv has not been paid, and any claim on her behalf to the contrary is not believed.
So the reason it doesn't work the other way, where the guy comes and sees, she says this shtar was not paid, and he says yes, it was paid, is because there's no reason to believe she was lying. Because if she was, there's no other thing like where she couldn't have thrown it away. She couldn't have done anything. She still has it because it wasn't paid.
Correct. And if the very fact that the shtar is here means it hasn't been paid, 100%.
I got it.
Okay. Have a great day, everybody. We'll reconvene tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem.